Welcome to another episode of the Wenner Folsom Podcast, your source for battle-tested leadership and resiliency. We got a great guest for us today, don't we, Philip?
We do. On my screen, he's right down here. Mr. Trevor Boehm. I consider you like not only just an ally and a leader in the men's movement, but a friend of mine. I enjoyed everything that you're doing in life as it relates to being a man. And
thank you.
Super excited to chop up stuff with you today about what's going on in uncivilized nation. I want to hear a little bit about your time in the dark. There's not a lot of men who have taken that journey. And obviously there's a lot of men who are into the fitness and martial arts and all the stuff that you have done a deep dive into as well. So
beautiful. Yeah. Thanks for having me on, fellas. Always a pleasure to see both of you.
Likewise.
Thank you.
So, hey, are you still in Colorado?
I am. I'm just outside Denver. Finally landed in a spot that feels like home for a bit. Yeah, I love it here. I miss the ocean. There's a general challenge with Colorado in that it's oceanless. I'm trying to figure out how to work around that. Yeah. But I do
miss the surfboard. I miss the mountains. We could swap at some point.
Anytime, Philip. Anytime.
Hey, these conversations always start with, so tell us a little bit what got you into. But in this case, I think it's kind of relevant because you're definitely somebody who is you're a searcher, and you still are a searcher. But I think you're somebody who's gone, transitioned from doing a lot of hunting to a lot of killing, like you're targeting stuff more in your life. So do you want to give us the quick on-ramp to the Trevor journey?
Sure. I think it's pretty similar to, I imagine, a lot of us, is that it started with loss. I used to live in Santa Barbara, California. I used to run this amazing gym. I used to be married to the woman of my dreams. Used to have a kid on the way. Used to have a dog. Used to have it, quote, everything that you'd want to have as a man. And with the asterisks, I was a fucking mess at the time, but didn't realize it. And in very short order, lost all of that. We lost the pregnancy, which led to a divorce, which didn't lead to a business partnership breakup, but it actually came the very next day. And it made me think back to my early 20s of reading a lot of Carolyn Mace work. There's something in one of the books that said, like, if three things happen in a row, hang on. The universe, God, whatever you want to say, is about to reorganize your life in a pretty significant way. And so that journey for me, like sitting on the couch that day, realizing, okay, I've just gotten divorced twice in 24 hours. I will not be a father anymore. I may not be. And sadly enough, I'm also probably going to lose my dog. That was a reality moment. That was like life hitting me in the face. But it also was an opportunity. And I fully remember, like, I got on a phone with this guy. You guys may know him, Johnny King. He wrote the book, I think, Wisdom of Kings.
Yeah, he's an
awesome dude.
Yeah, he was in Denver and just moved recently.
Yeah. Great guy. Yeah. I didn't know him, but I knew his sister, Molly King. She was a gym member of mine. And I reached out and told her my story. And she's like, oh my God, you got to get on the phone with my brother. He went on a business trip, married, came home from said business trip to an empty apartment, and just get on the phone with him. And so I got on the phone with Johnny, and very quickly he said, all right, here's the deal, man. This is going to be the worst year of your life, or it's going to be the best year of your life. But here's the truth. It's going to be the hardest, no matter what you decide, but you have some decisions to make. And so in that moment, I made some pretty radical decisions to quit drinking, quit looking at porn, quit smoking dope, go to therapy, look at all the ways that my life had been out of alignment and out of integrity that I wasn't quite ready to admit until I landed on rock bottom and said, you know what? Fuck this. I do not want to end up here again 3 years from now with a different color wrapping paper around the same problem. So I went on this deep dive of really trying to answer the question, first, who am I, right? Without this woman, without this marriage, without this title, without this job, without the business. But more interestingly, I think for your audience and for the guys listening, was who am I as a man? And that question, fellas, like, it just had never been dropped into my consciousness. I didn't know. It's like the guy showing up to the gym for the first time in his life and being like, wait a minute, I can change my body? Where has this been for 39 years? That question just never got dropped in. And so I did go on this deep search of working with teachers and going to workshops, like so many of the people that find us, reading the books, diving into David Data's work, into Robert Master's work, Jack Donovan's work, and then feeling like, how does this relate to me? If I go on my own personal journey with this of, okay, what are my pains? What are my traumas? How do I work through them? What are my proclivities? What lights me up? What makes me different? Why did I lead the life that I lived primally, of all the professions I had, of being a pro fighter, being a bodyguard, being a gym owner? Like, what about that can I take with me? But that what was intermixed in that that I also need to let go of? And then what's the part on the divine side or the consciousness side, the emotional intelligence side, that was just this giant room with a locked door for the first 39 years of my life. That I think when I opened the door, remember the old cartoons of like a stuffed closet and then the door cracks like a micro inch and then all the shit comes tumbling out on top of the person. Everybody's first 6 months in self-development are like, oh, wow, everything's wrong with me.
Yeah. Hey, for you, like in the hero's journey model, there's some sort of core wound around abandonment or inadequacy, early childhood. Of those two, which one is yours? Abandonment or inadequacy?
Abandonment. Which is why I think I married someone who on some level I knew would leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
That recreating what's familiar.
1000%. It's kind of embarrassing, or it's, I look back on it with both compassion and like, oh man, but we used to have to start sit downs as a couple with her saying, hey, just so you know, I'm not leaving.
Wow.
But we got to pay the electric bill. Or like, hey, we got to do something that's not working. Yeah. But if she didn't preface it with that, I would go blank in those conversations. I would go numb. I would freak out. I would just be completely, you know, she could do this in front of my eyes. And only thing running in my head was she's leaving, she's leaving, she's leaving, she's leaving, she's leaving, she's leaving.
It's actually really important because I actually find we usually attract the opposite. So most times it seems to be the pattern that shows up is whoever has the abandonment wound typically attracts the inadequacy because we trigger those in each other. And then when we have a nervous system trauma response, you know, we don't have the emotion regulation tools, we get activated and one partner says the other partner's not enough, then the other partner gets upset and leaps. So it actually, I find it never goes away. We just learn how to become emotionally regulated so we can lean into those and much more aware of it. So it's a really vital conversation.
Mm. Yeah. And that, Josh, was my marriage. I didn't know till later because I couldn't do anything but pedestalize the woman. But when I found out later, like, well, you don't think you're enough. You don't think you're worth it, but you're a professional model. How can this be? People pay you to take pictures of you. How can you have this? And it hadn't hit my consciousness yet that one, what happened to us in our past and our upbringings could affect us later. Like that was a really tough day when that landed in my brain. But it also started to put these puzzle pieces or almost like Tetris pieces that were taken out of the bottom of the foundation of my life. And they started to get slid back in. That then I actually had a foundation upon which to build something real that wasn't just reactive or wasn't just wound projection into one more relationship, one more failed job, one more addiction, whatever we want to call it.
Yeah. One area I want to go into, because what Philip and I've talked about a lot, there's a lot of guys in men's work that are leading. There's a whole movement happening right now. For anybody that's listening, I'm sure you're seeing all kinds of men's groups, and we've categorized, and there's like the high leadership side and there's a high resiliency side. And we really see you as very similar to us, and we value both. We're not kind of overly on either edge. And so it sounds like part of your, or that doing versus being conversation and balancing both. I know you use different language, savage man and versus nice guy. So it sounds like, I know a pivotal moment was the cave. Was that one of your moments of really stepping into being that beingness and accepting that, that dark night of the soul or the abyss or the cave you feared to enter, if you will?
For sure. I mean, both metaphorically and physically, that for a month, I would be alone in a room with zero light. And that took out every last possible distraction other than going to the bathroom and showering, right? There was no books. There was no music. There were no people. There was nothing to project on. There was nothing to get addicted to. There was nothing to take my mind off of what I felt in the moment. And so it was the starkest face-to-face comeuppance of, this is all the shit that's still in here. These are the mind movies that are going to run without your permission. These are the thoughts that are going to come up. These are the feelings that are going to come up. Then where are you going to stuff them? There's nowhere to fucking go. There's no one to distract me. There's no one even to soothe, right? So I just had to sit in this cauldron of my own pain, my own trauma, my own ideas, my own motivation, my own drive, like all of it. I got to feel all of it for longer than I was comfortable with. Like I always describe that as I white knuckled the first week, did a lot of push-ups, did a lot of burpees, did a lot of squats, meditated. And was like, this is going to be a fucking joke. I'm going to come out of here bored 3 weeks from now. And that was not the case at all.
Did you get the DMT release?
Philip, I was told it would come like day 11, day 12. So I also waited for it, but mine wasn't very psychedelic. I can pinpoint one day, the whole room turned into a fish tank. And that was it. It was like, oh, cool. There's fish here. I'm in the oceans. And other than that, there were just some like shadow hallucinations where I'd feel like animals were running across the room. Or I had this terrible, terrible experience. I don't know if you can imagine this. For 2 or 3 days, there was a bright light in my eye. So I couldn't sleep, super uncomfortable, but there was nothing to block it. I would put my hand over my eye, still white light. I would touch my eyeball to see if my eyes were closed or not, still bright light. And it was torture. But I didn't have the, I was waiting. And the woman who guided me, she's like, I go in there after the first day. It's just this beautiful trip with angels and like flying around the cosmos. And I was like, day 11, it's day 11. It's got to come any day. Yeah. And it did not come.
And I've done a lot of work in the paleoanthropological world with the wolf stuff. And I've done a lot of research on obviously the cave art, which is some of the oldest symbolic or representational art that we have. And it's almost always at a point in these cave systems that you would need multiple days to get out into. It's so deep, mm-hmm. some of these caves. And sense. They keep finding other ones in different parts of the world that are older than we even knew that there was symbolic art happening.
Yeah.
And so we've been going into dark caves for at least 70,000 years to figure out something, right? And it definitely could have been part of the engine of our cognitive revolution. So I haven't actually done that, but there does seem to be a lot of research that we do have a DMT release at around 10 days in the dark, which does alter or rewire some form of consciousness in the shamanistic sense or whatever that thing was.
Yeah. Didn't quite happen. I waited. I said when I came out, mine was far more biographical, where I got to go back and relive a lot, things I wanted to and things I didn't. It was wildly out of my control, but it felt more inward journey than outward and upward journey. But I am planning to do it again in 2 years and this time go in for 49 days. See, like, what is the difference? What's the difference not coming in, carrying a lot of, knock on wood, hopefully acute trauma as a different entry point? But yeah, I want to go back in.
Just walk us through. So you came out of that experience, because really what I'm hearing you say is you are forced to be in a relationship with yourself. And I think that's where most all of us struggle, is all the distractions, the numbing, the avoiding, or what we'd call a lot of times we don't have tools to process pain usually growing up. And so instead we just are taught as men, put it in a nice little box and handle your shit. And so that box gets more and more full until it fills us right up from the heart, right up into the head. And so we're living these structures of in our mind and really blocked from armored up down here. So when you're forced to sit in it and not escape, you're forced to go through that, the mess, essentially to be there more deeply with yourself. Did you come out with a new awareness, and did it dramatically shift your then direction?
Yes, and it was more subtle, right? So one of the frames that I went in there with was, I will not judge anything that comes up. Like, I'm a conduit for whatever wants to come through me, come up, my past. Like, I'm not going to beat the shit out of myself at all for what comes forward. And to have a month with no self-judgment was liberating in ways that aren't cognitive. Like, it landed deeper to be like, you know what? Actually, I am going to be okay. I am okay as a person. I am okay as a man. These things happened to me. This is what I lived through. This is my past. This is who I am. So just that frame, let's call it. And then secondly, one of the more profound experiences in there was for about a day and a half. This was late in the game, like day 25, day 26-ish. I had been so sleep deprived. Lost a lot of weight because I wasn't getting fed very much and it was all vegan. I was hallucinating, not outward visionly, if that makes sense, but I actually couldn't tell if I was alive or dead. And that's an odd thing to speak to. People are bringing food, so someone's eating it. I think I'm alive, but maybe it's all a dream. Just, I was down the rabbit hole pretty far. And coming out of that, what came out of that was, this will be my reality at some point in the not too distant future. I was 40 years old when I went in. I'm like, I don't have 100 years. And this is obviously before AI was either going to kill us or make us all live to 500. We'll find out next week. But I thought, okay, this is what death is. And this is actually what it's going to be. I will be in a pitch black place. I don't know what my consciousness will be going. And here's the juice of this whole understanding. The world is still going on around me. People are getting married today somewhere. People are having babies. People are dying. People are arguing on Facebook. People are doing all the shit. I'm relatively irrelevant. My death is not going to stop the world in its tracks for months on end. And oh my God, how will we ever go on without him? There will be a blip and there will be maybe a ceremony and then boom, the world will continue. Now, that may sound morbid, but really, Josh, the juice of it was that was pure fucking freedom. And I went, okay, here's the deal. When I come out of here, I'm going to write my ass off. I'm going to talk about shit that no one else wants to talk about. People can fucking hate me. People can love me. People can celebrate me. People can tear me down. People can call me whatever they want. And 40 years from now, I'm going to be in a place just like this, pitch black, and none of it's going to matter. So instead of letting that be depressing, I took that as permission to swing for the fences and to fail miserably and to have all of the human experience really be open and available, not just saying that cognitively or writing some nice meme that like, hey, everything's okay. It was like, it hit me probably for the first time in my life, in my heart and in my gut. All right, this is the juice. This is the deal. You only get one shot at it. Come out of here fucking swinging. And so really that is what I did. I don't think I could have built the movement. I don't think I could have built Uncivilized. I definitely wouldn't have written Man Uncivilized in the way I did without that permission to go, people are going to hate you for this. Write it anyway. Because guess what? We're all going to die. Mm-hmm. So I hope that doesn't sound depressing and morbid, but really was quite, quite liberating.
It's as the Stoics say, memento mori. You don't actually start living till you face your death.
Yeah, man.
So powerful.
As it relates to your book. And yeah. I think it's behind you too. Oh, yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
So if you can't see, or if you're just listening to this, Traver's book, Man Uncivilized, has probably got the coolest cover of any book potentially ever written. I don't know. I mean, it's right up there.
I agree.
On one side is this just savage, screaming silverback gorilla. And the other side is Buddha. So it's the yin-yang. It's Michael Holt, Savage and Saint. He's another guy in the men's movement.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the things about the dichotomy of those two graphics on your book is the gorilla's a vegan. That's not a predator.
Yeah.
But it's the most savage animal in the world. And the Buddha in meditation, like Michael Holt says, is an incredibly savage practice. So there's this beautiful yin-yang topic on the cover of the book. But inside, it's just chock-filled with really, really great stuff. And I have a lot of pages folded over on this book that are ones that I like. And one of them was that you like to ask men what they're building. That's one of your topics. And it's one of those things that stayed with me. I don't really care. Like, hey, how's it going? And what are you doing? Like, what are you building? And for me, that's such a good question because men build things. We create externally. We don't give birth to people. We create things externally. Regardless of what your belief is about masculinity, that is the reality. We express and impregnate the world externally. What are you building? So what are you building?
What am I building?
Yeah, what are you building?
I'm building a movement of a million fucking men who express their masculinity through both the primal and the divine. That's what I'm building, man.
All right. We're a little part of that.
When I get up, I know exactly what I'm doing. I know exactly the frame. You guys are part of it, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It was clarifying, right, Philip? So that was given to me by Kimberly Weil, a coach of mine. And I was like, I don't want another goal list. I don't want another quote mission statement. She's like, it's not a mission statement. It's the thing that the frame within which you get to actually expand and have creativity. And when it did land, when that sentence landed that I just said to you 5-6 years ago, like, one, I got a full body chill. And I think I started crying. I was like, okay, I'm on to something here, viscerally, somatically reacting to this. So it's real. And so many pieces of my life fell into place in that moment. So many of the ways that I would distract myself still, or insecurities that I had, or like, who am I to do? It was like, get that shit's gone now. It's time to get to fucking work. It was like being handed a plan. And even though I had no idea of all of the magic and all of the things and people and places and whatnot that would come into play from that building statement, I've now worked with thousands of men, and it is one of the first questions. And when guys come to me who are struggling, it's one of the first questions I ask them, what are you building? And if they're like, okay, well, there's a big part of your challenge. And I don't need guys to have like, I'm building this massive thing. I said in the book, right? I used to have a client who's like, I'm building a safe world for my autistic son. Boom. Like, what do you think? Do you think that guy's motivated? Do you think that guy's got a purpose? You think that guy's driven? I think that guy's like sitting in his basement, smoking dope, jerking off to porn? No, he's got a mission. He's got something to do with himself. We are the doers. It doesn't mean that we take focus off of being. I don't want to build this thing and be miserable the entire time. I don't want to be burnt out. I don't want to be angry. I don't want to be unrelational. I want to be in relationship and in community. I want to be full. I want to be expressed. But man, I'm a dude. I need to do. I need to go pick up heavy shit. I need to try to choke people consensually. I need to go shoot guns and drive my car. Like, I need to do. I've done a lot of being, and it's great. But man, nothing lights me up like doing. And I find most men, that's the same.
Facts.
Hey, we thank you for listening to the Wenner Folsom podcast. Just a couple quick notes. First, if you are a man and you're looking for an honorable and inspiring group of men to hold you accountable and challenge you to grow in your relationships, your fitness, your career, your finances, and your life, go to www.k4men.com. And if you are a veteran, first responder, or man or woman who deals with trauma, and you are looking for some resiliency tools and skills for you, your team, or your organization, go to valorresiliency.com. Hope to see you there. Back to the podcast. Yeah, I really love it. And we've actually had Dr. Robert Glover on for No More Mr. Nice Guy. And I know you do a lot around that work as well, is hammering that nice guy, because I think a lot of us get stuck in that because we are primarily of a bunch of generations of uninitiated men. And so with that, we all have a responsibility as men to first father ourselves and then to actually start to father each other. And I think that's really what's starting to happen here. And it seems like those two areas, I think you said the primal and divine is, yeah, where do you need? If a man is too focused on being, he's going to have to step into doing or access the primal. And if he's so focused on doing, he's going to need to step into that doing or that beingness, which I relate to a lot. That's currently the message I'm on, is no more stop doing so much that I can't be, right, and really find a way to have that vitality within me. So I have life around me. Right. So I really relate to that. How do you see that? Which one do you find comes up more? Is it more men having to step into being or doing?
Josh, I'd split it right down the middle, and almost a bit generationally. I'm 47, and I think guys maybe 10 years younger than me and up, it's they have to learn how to be. The guys 10 years younger than me and younger, they need to get their asses in gear and do some doing. It is the combo of the two. I think one of the challenges we see with young men is that they don't feel like there's a place for them, and they don't feel there's a place for whatever it is that they want to build. And unfortunately, a lot of us grew up watching our fathers and grandfathers do. And we were young, craving, like, hey, just feel me. Let me feel you. I want to see you express something. I don't want to see you come home from work, pour a scotch, numb out in front of the TV, numb out on Saturday and Sunday watching football, and then go back to doing. But I think it's pretty split down the middle, man. Or depending on, you know, community-based. I know you guys do a lot of work with the military, and that I would say it's a bit more of the feeling, a bit more of the being. And for guys, I'd say still for young guys, man, it breaks my heart when I talk to kids and say that term 20 and under. I'm like, well, what are you going to fucking do with yourself? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I haven't figured it out. It's the, I don't want to do anything. There's no point in doing anything. And that's sort of, all right, I'm going to light a fire under your ass right now. If nothing else, get to the gym. If you think the world's going to collapse, or you grew up at 9/11 and then you lived through the pandemic and you're when you got out of high school and whatever, and you feel like you have no control of anything you can build, you got this thing. You got a body that you can get in there and start to transform. I mean, I'd say it's probably about 50-50.
I love that. I would agree with that too. I think that's what we're constantly learning, the dance, I think, between the two, right? It's like, yeah, you focus a little bit too much on being, and then you're like, I got to get back to purpose and mission. And then you lead forward, and then you're like, ah, I'm burning out a little too hard. And so it's that constant weave of
Josh,
the contrast.
What you mentioned earlier was that's the two sides of the continuum of men's work. We have the leadership, success, money, abs, and then we have the resiliency, sacred bro, consciousness, community. Those really are the two sides. That is the polarity of the men's movement.
For sure.
And our two communities are much more central on that continuum.
Yeah. And I think we use the archetypes as one of the master maps we teach. And that's why I love it so much, because it gives me permission to be all of them. And it gives permission. We combine the two and do goal setting quarterly. But then you goal set and you look at your archetypes and say, what do I need this quarter? Do I need a little bit more doing? Do I need a little bit more being? And each of the houses can have those components. So it really helps me at least navigate that. I'm curious for you. I know you go deep in the no more Mr. Nice Guy, or what comes up around that for you? Like, what's the sweet spot for you that you find with men around that conversation?
I think the number one piece that's missing with those guys is permission to have wants and needs. And so I get that community is often, you know, it's how much in the movement, and I know I'm probably guilty of this too, is like men need to lead. And then you get a room full of 15 of these guys and say, cool, tell me what it was like growing up. And I have guys just this past weekend say, like, if I made any noise in my house, there were holes punched in the wall, there were bottles thrown, I was thrown. So we have these guys that literally have been neutered. Their masculine drive, their masculine core, their masculine penetrative parts energetically have just been cut. And so first thing we have them do is look at what has been your survival strategy and why was it necessary? I mean, this will get me all fucked up emotionally, because just to hear, like, I had to placate to X, Y, and Z per person, or else I wouldn't have made it past age 5. Right? And like, amazing. I understand why at 42, you're still doing the same shit with your boss, with your friends, with your wife, because that software was instilled so fucking early and with such dire consequences that it's going to carry you through. And so really getting them to identify that as a big thing. We just had a Kill the Nice Guy workshop here this past weekend. And to have them stand in front of a group of men and say, this is what I had to do to survive. This was my survival strategy. And a lot of it gets continued, Josh. It's not just like, well, my dad was abusive when I was 5. It's, well, when I hit 13 and everybody was getting girls and girlfriends and I was still 67 pounds and this skinny and had acne and braces, I learned to be funny. That's how I survived. Or that's how I survived in the friend group. That's how I survived in the such and such. So really getting guys to shift away from the world's not okay and I'm not okay in it to actually, you know what? I am all right. I had a guy this weekend who's like 6'5", just a giant of a man who still operates under this presumption that he's a very small little boy. So to get him just to own the fact that, like, dude, you walk in the room and I'm like, Jesus, this guy's a fucking monster. And get him to sit in that and be okay with that. I know this is one of my branded terms, but to be dangerous, but not a danger. So really to get these guys to tap into, it's okay. Not only can you have wants and needs, you have them. And so if you're not identifying them and actually sourcing them consciously, relationally, you are getting them met sideways or in the shadow. You definitely are. So that's, I think, access point number one. Like, what do you want? What do you need? What do you need to make the world be okay? What do you need for you to be okay in the world? And that's a big question for men, because we often are so service focused, especially that community. That community of nice guys is like, you know how the world's okay and I'm okay? I just got to take care of everybody else's needs.
Covert contracts.
Exactly. And like, well, cool. How much energy do you have? At 99.9 of them, like, I'm fucking exhausted. I'm like, cool. How are you getting sourced? How are you getting resourced? Go ahead. You have a question.
I'm relating to this. Part of how I see this showing up as well is I see a common thing of when you try to feel, you can't feel. So there's so much armor and a lot of times dissociation from our feelings because there was no space for them, that when you try to actually feel what's going on with you, it's just, I got nothing. Right. So it's much easier to go, well, let me focus on everybody else because at least I'll be value added if I can add value to them. So part of it is, this is why we're big advocates of how do you learn to start to take off the armor so you can actually feel what's going on, which we use language like wild man. That's our language for actually starting to being authentic. That's really the conversation we're having. But to be authentic, you got to feel yourself. You got to be able to feel your own needs. And then it's going to require the courage to actually start to communicate that. And there's been a lot of guys in our community that were on the edge of divorce that was like, instead of walking, I'm going to recommit because we got guys blocking the exits. And when I recommit, I'm going to be authentic because that's all I got left. And then in doing so, interesting enough, the spouses actually feel
safer. That's all they're waiting for.
Yeah. There's like the safety that comes of, oh, I can trust you now because you're going to be authentic with me. And it shifts the relationships dramatically. So it's, I think a number of components, if anybody's listening, is where I'm tagging, where they're like, I can't feel my needs or I can't feel what I want. I just want to let you know, if you're listening, you're not alone. And it's going to require doing some practices to get into the body, being around good groups of men and actually using some hands-on work to get in the body. Cause I know you also work with Michael Gay. Yep. We do similar types of work at our retreats where sometimes you're going to have to offload some stuff to actually get in the body to feel like, oh, now I'm actually in the body and I can feel what's happening.
Yeah. Or get around a group of guys who are going to say like, you are safe. It's safe to feel this. I know it's going to feel like you're about to fall down 50 flights of stairs and here you are teetering on that top stair. But guess what? You got 25 hands that are going to be there to catch you down every one of those stairs. Because the battle internally is authenticity versus attachment. And we as humans, as any creature, will choose attachment over anything because we have to. I can't order on Amazon when I'm 6 weeks old and be like, hey, more formula, a little bit of a warmer blanket, please, and a caregiver. Like you're actually going to freeze, starve, and die. So then we start coming up, like, what else can we get attached to? Can we get attached to our own resourcing? I think that's another piece for nice guys or even for guys listening. And for guys like you and I, Josh, who often find ourselves fucking exhausted, is the biggest gift that we can give, not only to our partners, to our communities, to our clients, to everybody listening, is to be well-resourced ourselves. Now, I did not come up hearing that. I did not grow up hearing that. I did not grow up seeing that. I grew up seeing the exact opposite and hearing the exact opposite. A real man works and works and works. And if he's not working, he's drinking. Like, okay, that was the model. And so to get into adulthood and go, actually, you know what? I'm going to take this weekend off. I'm going to sit on the couch and read a book. I'm going to go walk in the woods with my dog. I'm going to go like laugh with friends. And this is actually going to make me more successful. It will make me a better partner. It'll make me a better father. It'll make me a better human. And even if I'm not trying to be better for anybody else, I will actually enjoy my one sweet fucking life, which again, I didn't grow up being modeled. My dad didn't sit me down at 14 and go, you know what? A real man loves his life. And then he was like, you're about old enough to get a fucking job. Go do that. You'll do this till you're like 70. And then you'll have 2 years of quote retirement where you'll sit around all curmudgeon-y and volunteer doing people's taxes because you don't know what the hell to do with yourself. And then hopefully you die quick. That was the model. Right?
In your sleep.
Yeah. One of the big pieces with nice guys is getting them to actually resource. Like, hey, what have you done for yourself lately? And I hear it like, well, when I do this, when I do that, when I do that, when I do that, if I have any time left over. And so one of the things we try to do is reorient the need criteria and say, what if you sourcing your own needs, taking care of your own needs, expressing your own needs, that was priority one. And then your whole life got to reorganize itself around that. And we're not talking about selfish stuff. We're not talking about the father of four who's like, well, I need to open a surf lodge in Costa Rica and leave my wife and marry a 20-year-old. That's not, please don't take that away from the message. The message is like, am I eating well? Am I going to the gym? Do I have brotherhood? Am I meditating? Is what I'm putting my life energy into also coming back to me? Do I have any sense of this cycle of give and take and joy? And it was, I think it was Michael who was like, what if we had like a rapid epidemic of male joy? Like, how would that fuck up the system? I remember being on a call, guys, and I did with, and I think I was leading the call, and I didn't know what to say next. It was like, fuck, you know, like as the MC of the call, it was one of those awkward moments where my brain's like, think of something to say, think of something to say, think of something kind of witty, because it was so deep. Oh yeah, that would change the game.
So just moving towards the next step, seeing into the future for the men's movement, because you were talking about joy, which is a state of being, and then we have the counter, which is the doing and what we're building. The men's movement is an engine of masculine transformation. It's a reclamation, it's a push into the future of men that have never existed before are now walking the planet. Like every man, and that's another tenet of your book too, is that is in this movement is meditating. They're all looking at getting sober. They're all looking at kicking porn. They're all in shape. There is a DNA of a new breed of masculinity. At some point, there needs to be a leadership conversation of these men entering the world in leadership capacities. I haven't seen that jump yet. When are we getting the politicians? When are we getting the school board? When are we getting beyond just the men who are leading in the men's work and, you know, getting likes and follows and books and like, okay, dude, good job. You got a podcast.
Yeah.
When are you going to now engage with the institutions of society? And what do you see in that front?
I think we're still doing our own personal work. And I think for a lot of men specifically, it is cleaning up their own house first. And then what happened, I think, for a number of us was cool. I cleaned up my own house. A lot of people asked me how I did it. That turned into a different idea of doing it for a private group. And then I think that needs to marinate a bit, Philip. So it needs to get embodied. And I mean, you guys are in the same club I am. So I think some of the extremes, first of all, need to burn themselves out. That's great. If you want to go be a Navy SEAL for the weekend, go be a Navy SEAL for the weekend. If you want to get some dude to scream in your face because your dad didn't give you any discipline, go do that. If you want to go paint your face and run around in the woods and pretend that ayahuasca is going to save everything, go do that. And at some point, you're going to have to come back to a grounded reality. And there's going to be a critical mass of grounded reality of guys who say, cool, my house is in order, movement's flourishing, I sold my books, I've done my things. I'm actually ready to enter what I think ages us into the eldership position, but it's not going to be age that pushes these guys. The eldership position is actually going to be, you know what? There's 1,000 people in my company and I now go on weekends and take care of this stuff. And I'm part of a men's group, but I haven't let it trickle down in. And now it's going to, right? I got brought into a fourth generation steel mill 2 months ago to teach men's work to 90 steel workers because the owner of the company was associated with Uncivilized. It was like, okay, that's how it's going to start. Like we take care of our own, then we go out a little bit further, then we go out a little bit further. I think the challenge in that is there's such a lack of authenticity and such a high level of corruption in those positions that we would actually need to fill to say, hey, if we really want to make a dent in suicide and addiction rates and domestic violence, then this needs to come from the top down. But man, that the top seems to be just rife with so much corruption, we don't even know what to do with it. I don't care how you vote, but it's on.
And it's now there. We have rejected our institutions.
For sure.
And that is nihilism at its very core. And I'm a little older than you are, so have seen that first men's movement in the 80s. And I'm fearful that we're going to run the same course, which is a bunch of men doing their own work and it never getting into the institutional level. Like we never saw the men's movement of the 80s with Bly and Gillette and that. It never got into police chiefs and school boards. So it never got integrated. And I'm just concerned that we're still looping our own. There's a selfishness about some of our work that we're doing, that it is pushing out into our families. It's getting out into the culture of organizations. Cool. But there was a time where men were expected to lead in an office. Those were the great men, founding fathers, Kennedys. Like at some point, it is your duty to assume public office. I'm just waiting to see how long and who it's going to be to start that there will be men who are stepping into formal leadership.
And there may be a combination where we all start to partner and like as tribe and community come up and actually start to champion as a collective unit of like, hey, these are the men that we're all trusting and start to ask you guys. That may be what parts to happen is a lot of us coming together and say, hey, who are the best men in your communities? Let's bring them all together and then let's all champion, get behind this. There may be some of that collective things that we can do together to start to make some of that change happen. Because for me personally, it feels like it's going to be an underground movement that changes the system, not the way it's currently built. I think it's going to be an underground movement that changes the current system. So that may be a collaborative thing that we do together because we're now starting to align. I think a lot of the men's groups are aligning more. So it's fun.
Yeah. Hey,
so what would be a challenge? Just a couple of things. One, we do a challenge to anybody listening. And then we also want to find out how guys can find out what you're up to. What would be a good challenge from this topic? Something you'd like them to take away and implement when they're listening to this?
I want you to answer this question, guys. What are your needs as a man? My needs as a man are very different than my needs as a human. I need food, water, shelter, and some community. My needs as a man go into a really different realm. And perhaps needs is a misguided term here. But I know when I'm hitting the gym 3-4 days a week, my life is infinitely better. I know when I do jiu-jitsu 3-4 times a week, my life is infinitely better. I know when I have sex with my partner in a certain frequency and a certain manner, my life is infinitely better. I know when I write about 5 to 10,000 words a week, my life is infinitely better. Now you take any of those five away, am I going to die? No. But am I going to be at my best? Am I going to be fully expressed in the world? Am I going to be living this thing as opposed to just preaching it and talking about it? I'm not. And so really, that's a great set of questions. And a follow-up one that I need to give the like 50-time asterisk that I don't want this to happen. What would you stop doing or what would you start doing if women suddenly didn't exist? In other words, how much of your life is geared towards the acquisition of sex or the acquisition of affirmation from women? Would you still drive the same car?
Or I was just saying, is it just women specific or just anybody and their partner, like their partner in general?
Their partner in general. So speak heteronormatively there, but just if sex went away, what would you stop doing? What would you start doing? These are just some mind games. And if you want to make it even more interesting, answer all the questions in a plank.
You got me with that. That's a really powerful question. I'll say one quick thing is I did a 5-month feminine cleanse and it was one of the most transformative things I've done. Right. And so a lot more to it, but that's a sledgehammer question. I'll just reaffirm that. Ask that a couple times to yourself because it's a sledgehammer. Yeah. What are you up to? How can you let guys know how to get a hold of you? Anybody listening? What are you up to? How do they get in contact with you? Anything you want to share?
Beautiful. Yeah. The best place to reach me is at Instagram at Traver Boehm. Philip's holding up my book, Man Uncivilized. Please get a hold of that or get it on Audible if you want to listen to it. I'm going to be heading over to Europe with Michael in June. We're doing a men's event there and a co-ed event the next day. I think we may be doing one in Amsterdam. And then we have another initiation in Asheville coming up in August. You can also check out my podcast, the Uncivilized Podcast. But really start with the books. If you're a nice guy, man, manuncivilized.com/kill-the-nice-guy. I know it's a bit of a loaded title, but fuck it. We got to kill those guys. And I mean, you got to kill the guy in yourself. Yeah, that's it, man. I'm not hard to get a hold of. Please, if something grabbed you on this too, I'd love to hear from you on Instagram. I'm open to answering questions. I open anybody who actually does message me as long as it's polite. And appreciate you guys having me on, man. I love it. I love what you're doing. I agree. It's so nice to have the middle ground groups where I'm like, oh, this work is all about being grounded. A couple groups out there that are grounded, a couple groups out there not that grounded. So I really appreciate what you guys are doing as well.
Yeah, but they're pushing the frontier in their own little part. So
for sure, for sure.
There's a purpose for it. Amen. You just may not see it.
Yeah, it's been such a pleasure. Thanks for jumping on with us. Really enjoy you and always a big fan of what you're doing in the world, Trevor.
Thank you. Thank you.
Everybody listening, stay battle tested.